WEB 2 WPK Mobile.
Connected KB1BYY. KB1BYY disconnected.
No, actually, Stuart, you're listening 955, but we hear you great. Are you on Echolink? KC2SQP, W2TTT. KC2SQP, W2TTT, we hear you.
Connected K2ZC.
This is W2 Tango Tango Tango. We'll start the TechNet in about 1 minute. Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR, W2TTT. Okay, nothing heard except some traffic on the Echolink. All right. Well, this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Meets Thursdays at 9 p.m. on the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club 2-meter repeater in Alpine, New Jersey. The frequency is 146.955. The PL is 141.3. And if you would like to access via Echolink, you can access the net by K2 Foxtrot Juliet dash L. K2 Foxtrot Juliet dash L. Alrighty. So the topic for tonight, or the way we handle topics, is we check in with our call signs, our names. We give an indication of whether or not we have a question, a comment, or both or none of the above. We encourage you to check in, even if you don't have a question or a comment for the net, because your presence can add texture and value to the dialogue, but only if we know that you're there. It's very, very disheartening, actually, to find out later, oh, yeah, I was listening to the net and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, gee, I would have loved to have been able to ask you a question about something. Makes for a livelier dialogue if we know who's there. So please do check in, hopefully with a question or comment, but lacking that, just check in. That would be great, too. All right. So we'll do this in an organized fashion so that we don't have everybody crashing in at once. So stations whose call signs begin with the letter A for Alpha, please call in with your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question, comment, both or none of the above. Over.
Alrighty. I haven't heard anything else there. So we'll start with the letter November. Anybody with a call sign whose call sign begins with the letter November.
Hi there, this is November 2, Oscar Kilo, Oscar Matt. And I don't have any comments or questions just yet. I'm just going to listen in.
Hey, Matt. Is that a new call?
No. I've had it for years. Just don't get on this net very often.
Okay, very good. So it's November Oscar 2 Oscar Kilo. Did I get that right?
No, November 2 Oscar Kilo.
Okay, November 2 Oscar Kilo November. Okay, very good, Matt. Very fine. Well, thank you for joining. And that's appreciated. Alrighty, anybody else with a November call?
One more time, November 2, Oscar, Kilo Oscar.
Oh my god. Okay, we got it this time. Oscar, Kilowatt Oscar. Very good, oh my lord. My. Alright, any other Novembers? Alrighty, very good. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter Whiskey.
W2JEK, done with a comment.
W1AU, none of the above.
Okay, I got Don, I got Bill, who else? Alrighty, how about the ever popular Kilo 2?
A2AMI, Tony. No questions, no comments. Just listening.
Yeah, Tony, I'm actually going to put you down for a comment about the VHF contest, which is not this weekend, but I'll let you explain all that. Any other Kilo 2s? Okay, how about any other Kilos?
Kilo Charlie 2, Sierra Quebec, Papa Stewart, mobile. No questions, just listening.
Okay, Stewart, very fine. Wow, you're mobile. I would have sworn you were on Echolink before when you... I'm sorry, I would have sworn that you were on Echolink. I just unkeyed. Sorry about that. All right, very good. Any other Kilos?
K2ZC, Dave, no questions, no comments. I'm on Echo Link on an iPod.
That's working great. Very, very nice. Where are you, Dave, just out of curiosity?
I'm at my QTH. I'm at home, North Hales.
Fine. Okay, very good. All right, any other stations, any call signs?
KO2OK, Bennett, no questions. No comments right now, KO2OK.
Bennett, very good. Anybody else? All righty, well, let's start with the obligatory... run through what we do have. So first comment is from W2JEK. Let's get on with what he might have to say. Mr. Don, K2BAR, W2TTT.
K2BAR, Nanette, W2JEK. Just want to remind everybody that Barra will be running its next DE session on Friday, the 20th of January at 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School. School, classroom number 123, like we usually have it. And anybody has any questions, please get in touch with me. Back to net, W2JEK.
All righty, very good. Anybody have any comments for Don? Okie doke. Didn't hear anything else. Let me try that again. Any comments for Don regarding the jet session? Okay, well, Don, let me just point out that your efforts have been rewarded. People started receiving their mail today with their upgrades and their licenses, so it's all very good. I've run into a couple of people today on the air who are have either seen it online or have it in their hot little hands. I know M2DDC has it in his hot little hands. So that's really, really good. Anybody else with comments? All right. Well, nothing there. Tony, over to you for a comment about the VHF contest, which is coming up. K2AMI, K2BAR, W2TTT.
This is K2AMI, Tony, and for the most accurate description of the VHF contest, please go to the ARO website. But definitely, from the top of my head, the VHF contest is next weekend, starting Saturday at 2 o'clock. That is, the on-the-air version starts at 2, but setup should occur before that. And it'll be, for the most part, on the VHF frequencies, including some UHF frequencies. There'll be stations on the air starting from 6 meters, 2 meters, 432, and 222. That is to say, my station hopefully will be on the air on those frequencies. Those are the four most common frequencies that are used. There are other frequencies above that that are used, but not as frequently. Let me just drop it for a second. Contest starts at 2 o'clock on Saturday and runs to 11 o'clock on Sunday night. Obviously, I'm not there all those hours, and many other stations are not there all those hours, but check in, give a call. I'll be operating, I think, as K2AMI from my home station with limited operation. I do have a need to take a short nap in the afternoon, and a break for supper, and a break for sleeping, and a break for church on Sunday morning. So there, in between all those events, I will be operating when I have a chance. Look for K2AMI. Now, one more drop. You can operate on these FM frequencies. The frequencies of the band that you're using now are valid for the VHF contest. And my station will be operating 146.58. We'll be listening on there whenever we are in the shack listening. So it's 146.58, and it's simplex, and it's with no tone. We'd like to hear you call in. And all you have to do is make 3 to 6 or 10, whatever you can make, contacts, log them on a piece of paper, and send them up to Phil Barber, and see if we can get a Bergen ARA club participation score, as we did back in the VHF contest on September. But we got a gavel, because we were in the top 10 on that top 10 clubs in that section, in that contest. So, by all means, it's a lot of fun for those guys who participate, and it's probably the most important bands to be used in the case of a local emergency, a national emergency, even a national emergency, but a local emergency for sure. These are the frequencies that will be used by the OEMs, by the RACES and ARIES groups. Back to net control.
Yeah, that's really true. I would argue that contest operating in general and VHF contest operating in specific are very good ways to should we say, groom yourself to be an effective, emergency traffic operator, for lack of a better term. Really, really does help. I can't believe how absorbent, by the way, the
what do you call it, the ground is, there's just so much moisture in the air, and the light doesn't propagate very much tonight. It's as dark as it is, the humidity is just knocking it down. It's not even diffusing it, it's just diffusing it odd ways. Alrighty. Any questions for Tony regarding operations during the VHF contest in 2 weeks, not this weekend, but the following weekend? Alrighty. Well, nothing heard there. Are there any other check-ins for the net tonight before we start? We're going to... any other topic, we'll see if anybody else has a preferred topic. Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, indicate whether you have a question or comment, both or none of the above.
K2BAR, this is AJ4WD, Alpha Juliet 4 Whiskey Delta. Rachel, no comment, no question.
Good evening, Rachel. All right. Got you in here. Any other stations? All right, well, we were poking through the amateurradio.tv listings, and I don't know if anyone's aware of that, but www.amateurradio.tv as in television, or Tuvalu, or Tuvalu, I guess. Recording of this TechNet since about its inception, starting with the third week it was recorded. And the reason why I know it's the third week is because if you listen to the second recording back in 2007 in April, early April, I made a comment, this is our fourth session. So we're coming up on our fifth year of TechNet, which is kind of amazing. One of the things that we've done in this time is we've really gotten a lot of guys interested in, you know, tinkering and guys experimenting with antennas and comparing notes, emergency operations, learning a little bit about radio propagation, computers and the like. So it's very, very cool. So before we begin the topic of what I wanted to talk about tonight, I was wondering if anybody had any other topics they would like to register. Alrighty, so I was privileged to be asked to do a brief presentation on Sunday to Barra on basically the utility of software-defined radio, you know, and kind of thinking in terms of not just as an operational tool, but also as a lab tool. You've got calibrated S-meters, you've got the ability to evaluate the quality of a transmission. You can even evaluate, you know, relative power improvements as you tweak an amplifier section. So you've got quite a bit to work with as a tool using a software-defined radio. And I would argue that you even have a great signal generator. It's frequency agile as whatever you've set up in the way of a radio. But it's pretty darn nifty-neato to have that capability all in one happy package. So we were talking about that, and people were asking about computers, and kind of in parallel with preparation for the talk, we drop it. In parallel with preparation for the talk, it was brought to my attention that I needed to replace a CPU in the tower, and I got myself first an i3, and then by the time I got done with the project, it ended up being a mid to high end i5 processor from Intel. But Jim Jackson and I have been going back and forth about a number of small processors, and one of his colleagues, I believe at work, suggested an Atom D510, and it's a motherboard, sells for $57, has on it the CPU, and pretty much everything you need to do to bring up a basic computer. I think you can put 2 or 4 gig of RAM on it without too much trouble. And while it's not going to take the world by storm, if you need something really, really cheap and really, really efficient to get you on the air, it's a good way to start. It's not a laptop or anything like that, but you can get a fairly decent machine for very little money if you look around. And for a little bit more, you can get an i3 processor that would be, you know, more than adequate. But, you know, if most of your applications are software-defined radio stuff, you probably want a little bit better processor. But if you can't afford it, this actually will perform adequately for very little money. So I do want to try to bring that to your attention as a possible solution. Wondering who has built up a PC in the last, let's say, 5 years or so. Because, boy, while it's gotten simpler with the devices and the drivers all coming in much more fluidly, you know, as we've introduced and actually watched the life cycle of XP come and go, and now we're on to Windows 7, we also have seen, we are starting hearing about Windows 8, which will be, I think, in beta this next few months. And, you know, I'm just kind of curious what people have assembled in the way of computers in the last, let's say, 4 or 5 years. Or do they just go out and buy it, and what did they buy? So, anybody have any thoughts on that subject?
WA2CAI. No comments, no questions. Thank you.
Okay, very, very good, Tom. Good evening. So, W1AU, you have not put together a machine in the last 5 years or bought one and had to configure it to your liking?
W1AU. I only have done it for work. I begrudgingly use Wintel systems for my own use. I use OS X, etc. Although I'm technically a certified developer on Windows, I don't get any fun out of that.
Okay, so what do you like to do in the way of setting machines up for your own use? Well, but what level of computerization have you put into your ham shack? I guess a simple question.
Not specifically into my ham shack. I have A to D converters and little microcontroller projects I put together. I don't really like connecting things with keyboards with things that have antennas, just because it takes a lot of the fun out for me. I respect those that do it, but for me, it's more interesting to go down to the chip level and build something.
Excellent. So tell us about your microcontrollers. That sounds lovely. And what AD converter are you using, and what are you using them for? That sounds very interesting.
I've used all sorts of different ones. It depends on, frankly, what has turned up magically surplus. In fact, one of the ones I was using here kind of fell on the floor, and along with a tray of other stuff. So I couldn't use it for a commercial project, so I used it for my own. But it's just, you know, like most hams do, you find something at a flea market. For me, it's finding something leftover industrial, and I'll just repurpose it.
Oh, have you applied any of these controllers to amateur radio station needs of any kind?
Right now I'm working on a audio DSP thingy, which is not working exactly the way it's supposed to, but it will sooner or later. A to D is, I used a junky little thing I had around, but I need to go a little faster. And that's probably about it. Remember, my philosophy is everything that I use for radio can be used out of a backpack on batteries. So if it doesn't fit in a small container that I carry with me along with tents and etc., I don't consider it to be my type of stuff. But again, that's just my flavor of things. I also like scallops, and not everybody else likes that.
Well, I like scallops, and I like what you're doing. That's great. Well, last year, well, previously I've worked on stamp controllers, but last year I got to play with an Arduino controller and came to the conclusion that they were fine for a lot of really cool things, including a rotator controller, so which I did not build, but boy, it's so easy to do. There's enough ADD on it to make a reasonable rotator controller. That would probably interface just fine with a HAM-M or a HAM-4 or anything else. It's amazing. As far as the current state of the art, well, you know, there's a lot of folks who are, you know, obviously PC bound. But if you've got other controllers, it's marvelous. And people would be very interested in knowing about those projects and seeing them. Your project. Where is your latest project as far as its doability? You said something about it being not quite powerful enough.
Yeah, the classic case of I have enough bits, but I didn't have enough speed giving resolution. It's just like, you know, burning a CD. If you decide to do an 8-bit depth, it's just you don't have much in the way of information. And I'm trying to gain more information. In effect, with an 817, I don't want to improve. Well, I mean, I can do it commercially for about $100, but I wanted to just experiment to see if I could make something better that could allow me to extract the inherent hiss that the 817 has, in fact most of the Yaesus have, out of the audio stream. And then if that worked well, I would perhaps go in and with a little more power play with the IF itself. The challenge comes with both of these is I'm trying to run this on 9.6 volts to 13 point something or other, and I'd like it to draw no current whatsoever. In fact, I'd like it to generate current. That's a dream. W1AU.
Well, you probably reverse a Peltier cell, and you know, by orienting the Peltier cell intelligently, you can probably generate some electricity. Why not? That'd be kind of cool. I don't know if there's enough current involved, but you could take a whack at it. Alrighty, well, that's very good. Any comments?
K2ZC disconnected.
Nothing I said.
Yeah, I'm hoping not, because actually I was going to ask him about that, but okay, very good. So, that sounds really, really nifty. So your goal is to use this thing is to demodulate a signal? Is that your ultimate goal?
Actually, what I'm trying to do is an FFT. I just wanted to take and break everything up into sort of bands and, in effect, do a poor man's IF filtering, knocking out say, 3 kilohertz and above. That would be the white noise that's coming in from the receiver, and playing some games with algorithms to try to choose which one of the FFT bands or more bands are most useful for communications.
That sounds excellent. That sounds really, really excellent. So you'll frequency hop and listen to the quality of the bands for known emitters in a time-synchronized fashion and make a decision as to what's the best path.
Well, that it's not so much best path. The algorithm would be, I'll determine on the bench, I don't know, even numbers or something like that. and then I'll go through all the even numbers and put that out to an ordinary audio amp. In fact, use the same audio amp that's in the receiver, and then that should be better communications quality. The problem, again, with the 817 and all the ASUS is that they have a whole bunch of pink noise screaming through, as do most radios, old radios anyway. And I'm going to kind of simulate DSP on the audio side, which it's been done a gazillion times, so it's not new science. But then if I get good at that, I'll be able to choose my own algorithm.
Very nice, very nice. So designing your own audio DSP, very, very nice. Okay. Well, anybody have any comments for Bill? Well, that's splendid, Bill. It really, really is. Did you want to add any more?
Actually, it's not the first time we've done this. One of the things that we did was a similar thing with actually a little greater bandwidth, and that was for an infrared camera. And I did the prototype of that one. And I can show it to you sometime. It's kind of a neat little thing.
I think it'd be very, very cool. It might be a good subject for a Barry meeting, too. Very, very cool. Alrighty. I'm just kind of wondering, would you be interested in shifting the algorithm into, let's say, the megahertz range so that you could conceivably, do it at a baseband frequency and, get some of these advantages, but, in the RF spectrum?
Yeah, you can do a lot more when you move it up in frequency. The challenge I have here is that if I'm doing it fast enough to, let's say, do a 10-band version for the area someplace between 200 hertz and 3 kilohertz, I'm chunking away at about 70 times the audio rate, and because of that, I'm using a lot of energy. So at the moment, I'm playing around with an amp and a half, which doesn't make it backpackable. So, there's a lot of stuff I have to do to make it better. And the problem is the higher speed draws more current. And so it depends on what chip falls off the bench as to how I benefit from that. Fortunately, all of the camera stuff we've done has been battery powered off of 7.2 volts. So, surprise, it is very appropriate for ham use.
Yeah, and you do have to be thoughtful about your current consumption. That really could be a nasty little trick if you mismanage it. Alrighty, that sounds pretty good, Bill. Maybe you do want to mention that to Towers at B and do a little dog and pony show for us one night on a Sunday.
Actually, the more interesting thing is the cameras. Have you ever worked with microbolometers?
No, and in fact, I don't know what a microbolometer is.
You just mentioned you understood Seebeck effect. It's basically a bunch of thermocouples in a thimble all piled up next to each other. Not very good physics, but nonetheless, it's about what it is. And it allows you to use thermal imaging capabilities in nominally 8 to 14 micron range, but you can also push it out using some very unusual optical techniques that I can talk about. The challenge is, it's just like Kodak coming up with assuming they're still in business this afternoon, coming up with a camera with a built-in light in the film compartment, because there's thermal energy generated from the camera and the microprocessor, so you have to be able to null that out. And so you have to memorize errors in the detector and memorize errors caused by thermal sources within the camera in order to take and image things that are at a reasonable temperature, say minus, say, 20 or 30 C up to, 300 C, 500 C, something like that.
Gotcha. Okay. Well,
brain fade on the bolometer, but yes, I know about the CVAC effect and also Peltier, which is basically the reciprocal observations. For anybody who cares what that refers to, you probably have seen these little coolers that will lay the little powered ice chests, and they're really not for ice, but they'll basically they look for a warm side and a cold side, and if you want to keep your food cold, you basically run the current one way, and if you want to keep the contents of your cooler warm, you run the current the other way. And if you wanted to let nature take its course, you just power it down and let the insulation of the box do what it's going to do with the ambient temperature of the air. So, if I remember right, Peltier effect is the cooling and heating, observed cooling and heating effect of the cell. And in the case of CVAC, that's the, if you create a temperature gradient, i.e. a cold and a hot on different sides of the cell, then it will charge the battery pretty efficiently.
You got it perfectly. It kind of reminds me at the lunch table, we would, engineering lunch table, we would sit down and draw out the, this one guy wanted to build an electric car. And so we figured a way of extending the range of the car by putting a little fan generator on the roof. He never did complete that car. W1AU.
Did he actually start it with any kind of earnestness?
Nah, we just finished lunch while we're discussing this. This is napkin design 101.
Yeah, well, I have a couple of patents based on those napkins, so I understand. I understand. All right, very good. Any more you want to add, Bill?
No, I'm just here to listen and learn.
Okay, very good. Well, there are two other processors that I wanted to mention. They're not PCs, or one is not anyway. One is the Raspberry Pi, P-I, if you can search that on a Google search. They've announced that their boards are available for about $35. They are little Linux machines. They have an HDMI port on one side and a USB on the other, I believe. They have some internal storage, enough to get things moving anyway, and obviously the I.O. devices are attached to. The HDMI interface will provide the video, and the USB provides all the mouse and keyboard type stuff. Part of me. Anyway, all is good with that. And let's see, what else can I tell you about that? I think there's of it that's $25, another version is $35, but the point is to bring computing power to students and let them program things and learn how to explore and do a variety of things. So having a Linux kernel on board, something that's a little bigger than your thumb, is pretty cool. And for $35 at the outside, that's even more cool. Has anyone looked at the Raspberry Pi stuff?
I'm a little bit familiar with them. I don't think they had started to actually deliver the products yet, but they were about to, last time I heard.
Well, you now can order them. They do exist. It's very cool. It's very, very cool. So enjoy that, to say the least. Just trying to think what else. The other one is Cotton Candy, if I remember right. It's called Cotton Candy, and that's going to be a little more expensive board. But that's more of a PC kind of thing. But also very, very good. And so if you put Cotton Candy computer into a Google search, you'll find it. But as I said, there's this little Atom processor, which is kind of like a poor man's i3.
And again, if you lightly load it, you can even use it for digital signal processing. I don't see a reason why not. If you're one of those folks who's, you know, looking to go ultra light, ultra cheap, that might be something to consider. Well, it's not exactly the most battery efficient. Someone referenced that they had 175 watts of power consumption on a particular motherboard with a particular set of disk drives. And they switched over to the, using the same drives, they switched over to this other board that's actually much more powerful. And lo and behold, their power consumption was less than 45 watts, which is pretty impressive, 175. Alrighty. Anybody else have anything to add? Well, I think one of the things we should really look at, since there are so many HAM-Ms, HAM-4s, and CD45s and CD44s out there, that we might consider cobbling together an Arduino-based rotator controller that we can plug into a USB port on any computer, we don't care what it is, and you basically talk to it, tell it where you want it to point, and or what motions you want it to go through, and it'll get there. I think we can even arrange for the feedback loop to work right. It's a resistive feedback loop in that particular rotator, so it's pretty straightforward to exercise that, as long as the resistor and the wiper arm are in fairly decent shape. But anyway, someone might consider that. There's a what's really, really nice about the way that could be done with the Arduino controller is that there's a built-in voltmeter, so you just basically read the voltage coming off that and just calibrate the voltage to a position, and you're good to go. Relatively speaking, that's quite sane to do. You slide your mouse. You slide your mouse into the rotator area, and you rotate your mouse, or you rotate your rotator by left clicking and right clicking, while your mouse is in a particular part of the screen, which is the mouse cognizant screen. So, you know, we've talked about people have talked about the multi-touch keyboard, you know, mouse pads and screens and things like that, where you use two fingers to make things bigger or smaller or to cause certain kinds of complex actions to occur. Well, what you can also do is have the mouse simply just be in a particular part of the real estate, in which case the way it works will be more analogous to a rotator than it would be to a left-click, select, right-click, pull-up options, you know, kind of a thing like Microsoft does. Anyway, I think mapping out that for, you know, HAM-4, HAM-3, HAM-2, or the CD45 or 44s would be pretty straightforward. Even the HAM-M would be pretty straightforward, because all you have to do is then calibrate the voltage to the direction, and you're good to go. I'm curious, based on that, has anyone ever built a Cornell Dublier rotator controller without a fit of assistance from Cornell Dublier?
I think Peter has.
Yeah, well, certainly if anyone would have done it, it would have been Peter. Peter's never checked into this net, so maybe that's something we can encourage him to do. That'd be lovely. Love to hear what he might have done with it. God knows he's taken apart a few controllers and their control heads, but or the rotators and their control heads. I don't think he's ever actually, well, I don't know if he's actually done one or not.
Well, he's certainly capable of doing it. He knows everything in every series by part number and where it's to go. I think he probably produces about two or three of those a month.
And he probably spends it on his motorcycle.
Could be.
That's pretty cool stuff, yeah. I agree, he's quite knowledgeable in that area. Ernie, anybody else have any thoughts as to what they might want to do with a microcontroller or PC of some sort? No, I just want to make another further comment. I just could not believe how lovely, quiet my PC is with the doors open and the side facing me. I was listening to the chassis fan, the CPU fan, the video card fan, all singing along at me, and it was so, so quiet. It really, really was. So we're going to make some progress with that, just on the acoustics alone, let alone the power consumption. One of my tests is going to be put out one of those little kilowatt power consumption meters on the P and compare it to its predecessor. Given it has all the same drives on it and actually has better video and other little goodies, it'll be very interesting to see what it does. Anyway, any further comments or check-ins for the net, please call K2B Air W2TTT. Well, I've got nothing more to add at this point. I could, but probably just belabor it for nothing. But I want to thank everybody for checking into that tonight. And if anyone would be interested in having a copy of the slides from the software-defined radio talk from last weekend, or want some of the references to some of the devices and machines we talked about tonight, Intel Atom processor board, CPU board with the processor for $57. You want the URL to that, or you want the rest, or a Raspberry Pi, or the cotton candy processors, and what they're about. Be more than happy to forward that on to you. On the Arduino Rotator Controller project, which probably requires some collaboration. Whatever you find attractive would be great. So anyway, one last call before we go. Okay, well, Bill, thank you very much for your comments tonight. And we'll talk with everybody later. I want to thank the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of the repeater. And just pointing out that toward the end of March, I think it's the third week of March, is our fifth anniversary. It'll be the start of our sixth year on the air on the TechNet. So, thank you very much. This is K2BAR W2TTT, off and clear, 673. Thank you, gentlemen. It's W2TTT. Anybody around?
W2WPKIS.
Now, where were you 10 minutes ago?
Sitting right here. But then I just turned on the HD. And I heard you say, anybody did?
Yeah, I heard somebody crunch the repeater after I closed the net. And so I figured I'd find out who that might be, and 'twas you. Okay. Ah, dear. Well, we had a slightly interesting night tonight. And I found out that Bill W1AU likes to build non-PC type programmable microcontrollers, digital signal processors, and all sorts of little goodies like that. So, very, very exciting stuff. We need to hear more about that from him in the future. But anyway, I'm just going to run in and get myself a cold beverage, and I'll be right back out. W2WPQ. Just give me 2 minutes. W2TTT.
K2BIE. WB2WPQ.
Thank you.